up on KSCP News, fish are on the move in Arctic waters, and one man explores his relationship with traditional faith in the Orthodox Church. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. You're listening to KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams with some local news on Wednesday, September 7th, 2016. The state's 22 legislative information offices will now be closed every Friday afternoon when the legislators not in session. The Legislative Council voted the action through last week 9-1. The closure is expected to cover a $298,000 cut in the legislators' operating budget this year, and some lawmakers on the council expressed an appetite to cut further by closing offices for the entire day on Fridays. Senator Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican, chairs the council. He says that could still happen down the road.
I can accept a half-day closure on Fridays to see how it works. It saves us enough money. And in the future, if we find that that's still not enough, when there are additional cuts, then maybe we should be going to a full day on Friday. But I think this is a step towards solving our problem.
The information offices are staffed by nonpartisan employees of the Legislative Affairs Agency. They facilitate teleconferencing for Alaskans to remotely attend legislative meetings. They also serve as a public point of contact and as interpreters for what's often a confusing lawmaking process. A new report shows more fish are moving to Arctic waters. The U.S. Geological Survey and the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management teamed up to create the inventory, which describes more than 100 species of fish found in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas, including 20 species new to the region. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel reports.
The Alaska Arctic Marine Fish Ecology Catalog for the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas has been a long time coming. Biologist Milton Love has been working on the project since 2009. He says the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas appear to be changing.
We're starting to see either new introductions of temperate fishes from the south, or at least larger numbers of them, particularly in the Beaufort Sea.
At this point, Love isn't sure what these changes mean for fish traditionally found in the Arctic. Since the area has historically been difficult to sample, it's hard to establish if fish are coming from the south or growing in population, or both. One species that could be affected is Arctic cod, a major player in the marine food web. Love says the species does better in near-freezing water.
If ice becomes less predominant over time and water's warm, then perhaps Arctic cod will not do as well. And there are a number of predatory birds and mammals that certainly feed in great quantity on Arctic cod.
If those species aren't able to eat anything else, they could be impacted too. Because of the importance of Arctic cod, the team analyzed the effects of a warming climate on the species, as well as its major competitor, saffron cod. As temperatures rise, both species will likely shift north. That would expand the range for saffron cod, but restrict the range for Arctic cod. Love sees a wide range of uses for the new report, from evaluating environmental impacts on the region to monitoring changes in fish distribution and managing fisheries. It also includes traditional Inupiaq names to improve communication between researchers and local communities. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
A big shakeup yesterday in Alaska's U.S. Senate race. Fairbanks attorney Joe Miller announced he will challenge Senator Lisa Murkowski after all. Miller says Libertarian nominee Sianne Stevens has withdrawn from the race, and her party has agreed to let Miller appear on the November ballot in her place. 6 years ago, Miller ran as a Tea Party-style Republican and beat Murkowski in the primary. She retained her seat by mounting a write-in campaign before the general election. By then, Miller's campaign was sinking under a pile of revelations about his past and the handcuffing of a news reporter at one of his campaign events by men acting as his security guards. In an email announcement about his candidacy, Miller accuses Murkowski of being too liberal and says he's running to offer voters a real choice. Other candidates in the race include independent Margaret Stock and Democratic nominee Ray McCaff. Since Russian priests began establishing missions at the end of the 18th century, the Orthodox Church has become a part of the Alaskan landscape. What's less visible today than Orthodox crosses and golden cupolas are the Alaskan Native belief systems that existed before European contact. KDLG's Hannah Colton has this story about one Dena'ina man who came to embrace his traditional spirituality and why he's choosing to speak up about it.
Larry Hill hesitates to call himself a shaman, but he is open about the fact that he often and inexplicably knows things that seem unknowable. We'll get back to that. For now, Hill is on the shore of Lake Clark in southwest Alaska, speaking to about a dozen kids from Nundalton. He pulls a flat, polished rock from his pocket.
So today, what I'd like you to do is find yourself a couple of stones. This is an example here.
We're at a Dena'ina culture camp, like this. And Hill is one of a handful of elders who've come to share their knowledge with the youth. This afternoon's lesson is on something called worry stones.
It's called a worry stone. Some of you may have heard that word before. There's a Dena'ina word for it, and I don't know what it is.
The idea, Hill explains, is that you can program the stone with happy, positive thoughts and use it when you're stressed or sad. It's based on a Dena'ina belief that everything in nature has some kind of energy.
Now, it's your choice whether you want to believe what I'm saying or not. That's up to you. Some people look upon this as, and I'll say the word, superstition. But to me, it's very real.
The kids fan out across the beach to pick their own stones.
The colors on that one are really cool.
Yeah.
Now, this idea that all things are connected through their energies, Hill learned it from his grandmother as a young boy in the village of Nundalton in the 40s and 50s. Back then, he says, he didn't understand much about spirituality. But already, he had an ability to know and see things that other people couldn't.
When you're 5 years old and you can touch a person's hand and see what they did for the last 3 days, and you tell them about it, man, that's scary to them.
It wasn't scary to Hill's closest relatives. Their family lore counts shamans and seers going back generations, on both his mother's Dena'ina side and his father's side in Finland. But it definitely freaked other people out.
And in the village, I got picked on sometimes and beat up because I would always know the answer to those questions.
So, like a lot of kids who don't fit in, Hill learned to hide who he was. He grew up shy, and by the time he was 20, he was spending a lot of time by himself up in the hills. Then in 1967, he joined the army and was sent to Korea. He found that his test scores were good, so he was pushed into schools and leadership roles.
I was able to do those things, and it gave me a lot more confidence in myself.
Hill also experienced things in the army that he doesn't like to talk about now. After he got out, he says he started drinking to cope with the bad memories and to drown out the voices in his head. When he eventually sobered up, the voices were still there, so he stopped fighting it.
About 20 years ago, there was a death in an unnamed village. And that night I received a message from that person. And I could not rest until I delivered that message.
Hill says he'd often have an answer to some unresolved question between the deceased and their loved one. In many cases, he says his message brought comfort to the bereaved. But other times, he was met with disbelief or anger. He says he's even been assaulted for it. And he's gotten pushback from another spiritual body, the Russian Orthodox community. Hill was baptized in the church. He considers himself a believer. But some of the local ministers, he says, do not like him bringing people these divinely inspired messages.
And they've told me that I'm promoting evil and contact with the devil. But I always ask when I get this compulsionist message, if it comes from God, And if I get the feeling that it does, then I'll relay the message. And some of these priests were family friends, and they haven't spoken to me since one occasion. But again, I accept that. I know that that's part of it.
Hill has accepted the messiness that comes with living out his beliefs. But these kids at camp, they're just starting out, and it's a lot to swallow.
The Worry Rock, I kind of believe in it.
That's Nolan Schaefer, Hill's grandson. He's 16, smart, and serious, and he's talked with his grandpa a lot about his spirituality. After the Worry Stone lesson, I asked him how he feels about these messages or voices his grandpa gets, and the fact that they seem to run in the family.
If that happened to me, I'd feel really weirded out, but I'd love it, because having a vision of something, good or bad, it would be pretty cool to actually have.
The Worry Stone is just one little piece of Dena Inna spirituality, one that Schaefer and the other kids can hold in their hands. It's a tiny window into a worldview that they're not being taught in school or at church, and Larry Hill hopes they'll understand someday when they're old enough to need it. For AK, I'm Hannah Colton.
And that's the news from Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams, and you're listening to KSDP 830 AM.